This is Music Respawn. I'm Kate Remington with Adam Gubman, and it's really great to have a chance to talk with you. Your soundtrack for Elsinore, the Hamlet-inspired game, is really fantastic, and so I'm really looking forward to diving in and talking with you about it.
And I am honored to be here. This was a long process for me to get to this point after 4.5 years of idea development and just this sort of super long project arc. I'm so thrilled this thing is finally alive and sort of out in the public, both the game and the soundtrack, I'm stoked. So thanks for having me.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Elizabethan music is like one of my very favorite genres, and you've just like totally nailed it.
Oh no, phenomenal. Did I? Well, you know what? It's interesting to hear you say that, and I really appreciate that. I did like a bunch of research on the styles, and of course I was a classically trained composer, but then, you know, sometimes you come to these projects and you look at them and you try to like dissect what the developer is really trying to say and hone in on the heart of what's there. And I feel like I sort of pulled in a few different directions. So I'm glad that you still hear some sort of semblance of what Elizabethan music might be somewhere in there.
Oh,
amidst
yeah,
all the dramatic madness.
Yeah, for sure. Well, yeah, and it sounds like they gave you a little bit of latitude, because clearly it's not just a reproduction of Hamlet. There's a lot of stuff going on, and the gameplay mechanic of the game resetting every 4 days, and then you've got an opportunity as Ophelia to try to do things differently or find out more information so that you can avoid everybody being killed and the tragedy that, you know, we know of from Hamlet. So it's going to be fun to talk with you about all the different styles of music that you put in there.
Yeah, too. Well, I think that's a really astute observation. And, it's interesting to me because the way that you said that, going back in time and also having a chance to play Ophelia, which, of course, is a really awesome and forward-thinking concept in sort of the Shakespearean world, to be able to play this female protagonist that really wasn't given a lot of focus in the original story, and that being sort of the crux of the story that Katie and Connor and the rest of the Golden Glitch crew wanted to tell, I sort of wanted to run with that and obviously, you know, treat Ophelia like the hero she is in this story, but also sort of peek behind the scenes of what might be going on the fringes of other parts of this sort of like fantastically built Shakespearean, you know, world, where maybe there's a lot of things happening that are sort of under the surface that we don't really see in the original Shakespearean prose, and how would that be musicalized? And I love that you focus on that right away, because I feel like that is a really important concept to understand, that this is, you know, somewhat close to the spirit of what Shakespeare had set out to write, but really with sort of like this modernist, you know, sort of like post-feminist movement twist, where we have a really strong protagonist who's still sort of like, she's still sort of downtrodden, and she's still sort of treated like she's nothing and treated like a weak woman, but she's really not. She's this strong woman, and she's in a setting where she's almost not allowed to be what her potential will allow her to be. And I find that to be like not only incredibly romanticized, but really sort of like an important reflection of what's happening in today's society. And so all those themes spoke to me in the way that I approached the music.
it must have been a really fun project. I mean, you've got hundreds and hundreds of game scores to your credit and then other projects. You've worked with Disney. Have you ever done anything like this before?
Well, you know, this is sort of, to me, this was, I didn't really see this as a game when I first approached it. And first of all, I guess I'd never really done an indie game of this breadth and width and just the girth of this thing. It's such a meaty game, even though it's a short-lived experience. It is a meaty game, and it's meaty in terms of the amount of content twists and the story that Golden Glitch allows the player to experience as they go through it, with its ever-changing endings and you know, sort of like little cells of ideas that morph and change as you go through the story in a really organic way. So no, I've never done anything like this, and I feel like neither had Golden Glitch or any of the folks over there. This was sort of like a passion project in its purest sense. And I saw this as an opportunity not only for me just to sort of spread my wings and to work on something that I hadn't really done on such an intimate level, but also to really like fall in love with the craft of making music again. And this has come sort of at the tail end of me coming out of a really terrible contract gig where I was feeling like I was just sort of like the craft and the artistry of what I'd always wanted to do was being just like stepped on and crushed. And it was sort of a soul sucking experience. And so for me to come and find this project in the with Katie, who I'd actually known since she was a kid, we can come back to that a little later. But this it sort of respawned me, and you know, much like Ophelia is reborn in the game multiple times, I felt like this was sort of a rebirth project and an opportunity for me to just explore who I am as an artist and a musician.
Wow. Well, I love the intimacy of all of the tracks. I mean, it's very easy to picture a little band of musicians just in a corner of one of those long halls in, you know, a fancy Elizabethan house. And so just being able to work on something that is, you know, chamber music and such an intimate grouping of musicians must have been a lot of fun too.
It absolutely was. And that's one of the really wonderful things about being a composer in 2019 is that we are allowed the opportunity to work with the whole world. You know, we have all these incredible musicians across the globe that have the technology, because it's affordable now, to be able to sit down and go, hey, I'm going to play this cello part, but I live in Austria and it's okay because, you know, I can do it and I can do it in an affordable way and send you a high quality wave file and you can put it in your thing and nobody will ever know. And you know what? I think that's really a glorious thing, is that we're now allowed to do this kind of thing where the musicianship and you know, it's no longer, hey, let's go to the local college, which might be wonderful, by the way, but let's go to the local college and just sort of find who we can. No, now it's like, let's get on Facebook and put out an APB and say, hey, I need a cellist, and they have to be able to play Baroque and they have to be able to do ornamental, you know, like early music styles. And who do you know that can do like a Hardanger fiddle? And who do you know that can do like, you know, Norwegian vocals? And then all of a sudden you have like a dozen folks to choose from that are all very enthusiastic and willing to kind of embark on this journey of you know, digital music production in a way that's like really sort of like the antithesis of what music is supposed to be, which you clearly stated is an intimate sort of corner of an Elizabethan manor where you're like there in the moment and trying to recreate that vibe, but working with musicians globally was definitely a challenge. But you know, a really cool thing that I felt like I had sort of just kind of come to terms with while I was doing this project is I wanted to let go of the idea that in order to create music, you have to have like a click track and like something to score to that had like momentum all the time. And so I created sheet music. And for some of the cues, not all of them, but for maybe like, I would say about 20 minutes of this. How long is the soundtrack? Like 2 hours is a long soundtrack, right? So we only set out to do 20 minutes of music for this thing. And I sort of got carried away. And I told Katie and Connor and the rest of the crew, I'm like, look, I got to do this. You got to let me do this. It was sort of like this cathartic process where I was like kneading out all these musical knots and this like emotional tension and energy just in my own life through this music. And it was so fun to be able to do that in a way that I felt was like contributing to this wonderful story that they wanted to tell. But anyway, so I created this these PDFs, you know, sheet music, and I would send them to some of the musicians, and I said, just give me a performance, perform this, and then I'm going to see what we can do with it after. And so I was, in essence, gathering material, raw spirit, raw energy from these other wonderful musicians, and I would use those elements in the production. So that's why some of the tracks feel like sort of free of time. And, you know, I had a string quartet out in Boston play one of the tunes, and I didn't send them a click track, and they called me back, and they're like, well, where's the click track? What's the tempo? And I said, well, it says adagio. You know what that means, right? And they're like, okay. And I said, you know what? Just do it musically. And I want it to feel natural, because to me, that's like what music of that period would have felt like anyways. We wouldn't have had things like click tracks and super edited like production stems and all that. It would have been a performance. And like you said, that's, I think, where a lot of the intimacy comes from, is the honesty of those performances that we were able to capture by having these wonderful musicians just be musical, which is a crazy concept. I know it seems like, well, obviously, but no, that's not always how it works. A lot of times things are clicked out and contrived and thought of and, you know, for weeks and or whatever. But this was like, I'm going to write this tune. I'm going to write a Baroque piece. I'm going to write something that sounds, you know, somewhat Elizabethan and cinematic, and send it over to you. And now you're going to play it for me. And I'm not going to tell you what to do. And I want something back organic and natural.
That really comes across in the tracks of the soundtrack, and also in the game as you're, you know, roaming around looking for whoever it is you need to talk with. And so much of the music from that era was improvised, and so did the musicians. And we should really give them credit, because they are amazing. Violinist Jeff Ball and guitarist Jeff Askew and William Arnold, who played the recorders and the flutes. And I know there are many, many others, but did you give them a lot of latitude to just improvise too?
So for some of it I did. And a lot of things I had sort of written out, but there was other elements there where I would say, I would give a vocalist or a wind player or a violist the part and say, this is your lead sheet. Here's the melody. Now go ahead and divert in a way that's going to surprise me. And so some of the flute performances that we got back and some of the guitar performances and everything, there's ornaments and there's things in there that do sort of lend to that. And, you know, I don't like necessarily to categorize the work as being Baroque, but it definitely does have that sort of like pre-Baroque era, sort of like 14th, 15th century twist and turn in the way that the ornaments are laid out. But also I wanted to sort of, you know, I it's interesting because to me a lot of the Shakespearean music that I loved was very much influenced by that sort of like 1950s mid-century black and white Romeo and Juliet and Hamlet. And you remember those old movies that we would watch like as a kid in junior high after reading, I remember reading Romeo and Juliet in seventh grade and then watching the movie. And there's like a scene where Juliet comes out and she's like, you know, you can see her rear end and all the kids would laugh. But those films from that era, that mid-century era film, the scores were so evocative and so wonderful and so beautiful. And they were very much like jazz-oriented scores, like Bernstein and stuff where, you know, have these big like chord extensions and Erman and just like all these like crazy like sevenths, ninths, and elevenths and wonderful twists and turns that way. So I try to incorporate some of that as well. So really what this score to me was is a mix of you know, theater and that sort of mid-century Shakespeare film that you might watch in your, you know, junior high class, and then also traditional 15th, 16th century music.
Yeah, well, it's really interesting that you mentioned that about the mid-20th century composers, too, because, yeah, they had their own, completely own other ideas of what the music was going to be. I'm thinking about the Orson Welles Macbeth, which was like terrifying. Yeah. Yep. But your cue to murder or not to murder really kind of captures that sound. That is such a cool track.
Thank you so much. And you know what, that comes from a place where Connor, the producer, one of the producers on the game, and Katie for that matter. I know Katie did a lot of writing, but at the end of the process, Connor sort of took over the music stuff as Katie was handling other duties. But Connor said, you know, we have all this intimate stuff, but we need some sort of bombastic pieces for when real tragedy is happening. And as we all know, Hamlet is indeed a tragedy to the utmost degree. And this game is no exception. I don't want to give away the ending or multiple endings, but absolutely, this game called for some bigger bombastic pieces. Most of those bigger pieces were all done in the box. We didn't use any live musicians on those just because it was sort of somewhat impossible to kind of manage a budget for that. In fact, we on a sort of an interesting tidbit about the way that the music was produced is you know, this game was a kickstarted game, right? So that means that it was funds that were raised to build this game. And originally I'd seen that Katie had put this sort of Kickstarter out, and I used to teach her piano when she was a kid. And then when my career started to take off, she had gotten a little older. I think we're about maybe 10 or 12 years apart in age. And when I stopped teaching is when my video game career started taking off, when I was like 26 or 27. But Katie and I stayed in touch after that. And she was always a huge fan of video games. We used to play Final Fantasy music and Mario music and Zelda music and Skyrim. We, you know, that's sort of what she was interested in. So I knew she had definitely the language, the understanding of what the score would sound like. So I thought, what a great opportunity for me to work with someone that who, you know, as a child, who I admired their musical tastes, and we had a great rapport, and, you know, as well as her family and her sister and everything like that. So when it came time for this game to be sort of kickstarted, I had asked her if I could submit for it. And she's like, oh, I never thought you'd be interested. And I said, yes, I'm absolutely interested. This is like, you know, a dream project for me. Let me, you know, I'd love to send a demo. So I did. And I guess there was a few folks that demoed for it. And then Katie says, well, we only have, you know, $4,000 because that's all we raised for this game. And I said, well, how much music do you want to get for $4,000? And she said, we want to do like 20 minutes of music. Is that possible? And of course, that's like way under average. The average rate per minute of music for a video game composer is around $1,000 per minute. So 20 minutes of music would have been like $20,000, you know, average. And I said, you know what, let's forget the money. I'm going to take all that money and I'm going to just invest it in the game. So I want that $4,000 to go to the musicians. And then I said, and I want to be able to write whatever I want and just write as much as I want. Because as we got into it, I'm like, yeah, we need another song here. Oh, we need another song there. So I sort of got carried away, and I ended up spending like maybe two times that on musicians. So when I say this was a passion project, this indeed was a passion project. I was like, oh man, I want to do another song. And because we had so much time to do it, I was able to take this sort of like luxurious, ridiculously luxurious amount of time on the production and revisiting the mixes and adding new material up until 2 weeks before the game was shipped, when Connor was like, hey, we need 8 more minutes of music. And so I did it across the course of a week. I'm like, you know what, whatever, I'll just do it. And so I did it, and I called a guitar player and I called another woodwind player out back east, and I sent them the track, and I said, in fact, this is funny because you were asking about improv, and I'd asked them both. I said, improvise some parts over this. Here's the sort of like ambient bed. What would you do if you were both in a 1940s version of Hamlet and living in Elizabethan, you know, Denmark or whatever? And so that's what they came up with. And those cues are sort of like these long ambient cues that happen towards the end of the game and stuff.
Just the whole wash of sound is so amazing. And because you had such a long time, were you able to like really dig in and, I don't know, kind of like reverse engineer the music by John Dowland and all the other, you know, Elizabethan composers who wrote music for Shakespeare's plays?
You know, I did go back and I listened to some of that. But what I was more interested in, and what was more informative to me, rather than speaking to the Elizabethan nature of this, was to really dive into Danish folk music and runesong from the Scandinavian regions. Because a lot of the music from those regions is very similar. You know, like how when we say something like Celtic music, but Celtic could also be Welsh music, and it could be, you know, a variety of things from you know, that region, because that's the way that musicians traveled and they shared ideas. So all across, you know, Norway and Denmark and that whole sort of Scandinavian region, we see a lot of similarities in both musical language and instrumentation. And that's what I leaned on more than the Elizabethan traditional stuff that you had sort of touched on, which I think is wonderful, but that's sort of on the nose to me. And I wanted to really, like I'd mentioned earlier in our talk about sort of like looking at on the periphery and under the surface of what was going on. It's like there's two levels of things happening here. When you read Hamlet and we read the story, and it's a very like male driven plot line with a lot of strong male characters, right? And then now we get to this version of Hamlet, which is a very, very much a female driven narrative, which has a female Rosencrantz and Guildenstern, and takes a lot of chances with with like a wonderful way of refocusing the story. To me, that spoke to what music might be happening outside of the main story. Like if Shakespeare wrote the main story, that would be Dowling. That would be all the sort of Elizabethan stuff. But in this story, this would be more of the intimate stuff, like the folk music and the source songs that the troubadours would be playing in the area and the folk musicians at the taverns and what music people would be playing, you know, in their bedrooms on their own lyres and lutes and on their own Hardanger fiddles and with their own, you know, wood flutes and what would that sound like? Når natten bringer alle monster fri. To me, that sort of under the surface idea, under the waves, is exactly what's happening in this game. So that was sort of my mirror to that. But also, I feel like the region needed to have its own voice. You know what I mean? The region needed to feel somewhat more authentic. So I what I did was I actually listened to a lot of mid-century, or by mid-century, I mean like 1950s style Danish folk music. And the song, for example, Don the Boat Boy that I have on there, that was actually meant for the pirates. And they use it in, it's interesting because this is something that's important to note, is that there's vocal versions and non-vocal versions. But because this is such a text-heavy game, the vocal versions don't always make it into the actual game. We hear the non-vocal versions in the game, and then the versions with words are special for the soundtrack. So that was sort of like, again, another sort of window into how I was seeing this music. I was sort of seeing it as theatrical, dramatic folk music rather than traditional Elizabethan fare, if that makes sense.
Yeah, it does. And I love Donnie the Boat Boy. I love how Kevin Oderkirk is singing about how hard it is. I mean,
I know, he's such a goofy guy. You know, that's Kevin's a great vocalist, and he's a very experienced Broadway actor, having done Marius and Les Mis for so many years. And we happened to go to high school together. So we had been friends since we were 14 or 15 years old, writing music in the 90s together. And then he went off to do his Broadway thing, came back here. We now live about a block away from each other and both have multiple children that go to the same school. And he still will sing for me here and there, even though now he doesn't do any Broadway anymore. But he's got such a wonderful voice. And he, you know, a lot of times I'll send him stuff that's just sort of off the cuff, ridiculously challenging, because I have this like sort of wishful thinking view of music arrangement and orchestration. And it's not always realistic. And a lot of times when orchestras see my scores, they're like, okay, we're gonna have to pick this apart, you know, maybe by half bar. And so then they'll go like two beats at a time playing these crazy runs. But, you know, then again, that's sort of like a thing you can do in 2019, I guess. But yeah, Kevin just was making commentary on how difficult the song was to sing, and I left it there because I thought it was, first of all, adorable, and second of all, very, very much a indicative of that sort of improvisational nature of what this music could be.
Boat boy, Donnie Don the boat boy, jiggers all the rigging, shakes the rats from the oat stores, hopping left and right, fighting lines from the port side. Short ride moat toy, Donnie Don the boat boy.
Short ride moat toy, Donnie Don the boat boy.
Yes, Don the skyline, Don my boy, it's boat tie. Standing on the the edge of Lecce Bay, coming hardline. Make a quick decision, do you leave or do you sail here? Do you anchor, meet your maker, Donnie? Do you ride the breaker?
Do you anchor, meet your maker, Donnie? Do you ride the breaker?
Hey there, Donnie Dong, Donnie, sing your sailor song.
Hey, 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 diddle, hey, diddle, hey, 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 trade a chrono for a song. Donnie's on the shore side, Donnie's on the bay ride, Donnie's on the downer, and the day's all done. Hey, hey,
I'm not gonna lie, this is a very difficult song to sing. I think this is one of them dance breaks. Oh, that's nice right there. Very cool. Oh, I like her. Don, but your friend's gone. Donnie sailors lifelong. Washing weary worries, never loving more than we scrub. Sloshes of the sailor, sending men across the world joy. Donnie with your float boy, no more little boat boy.
Donnie with your float boy.
Excellent. Donnie at the end now, sailor wolf and port bow. Never saved a penny, still the richest man I know how. Everything here was in his heart, a simple memory. Women, towns, ale of brown, reds and pies and mermaid eyes.
Fish are swimming, waves are crashing, these just fights, so thanks for asking.
Hey there, Donnie Don, how the hell do you live so long? Hey, 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 diddle, hey, diddle, hey, 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 take a corona for a song. Donnie's on the shore side, Donnie's on the bay ride, Donnie's on the downer and the day's all done.
Donnie on the shore side, Donnie on the day
right,
Donnie on the downer and the day's all done.
Donnie's at the day's end, saw the world and then again, Donnie's on the downer and the day's all done.
I loved it because you never hear in a final soundtrack or the final cut how hard it is. The musicians never like whine about what a challenge it was for them. So
love it.
I really love that.
Cool.
The songs that you did were also just amazing. And you worked with John Robert Matz and Caitlin Isaacson. And who wrote the lyrics for those?
So half of the lyrics were done by a very good friend of mine, the fat man, George Singer, who's actually a sort of like a legendary video game composer all the way back to the 90s, early 90s. And then I wrote the rest of the lyrics. This game was really an opportunity for me to explore collaborative endeavors with people that I absolutely adored. And so I really did try to get as many of my friends that I love on this project. And George is one of those guys that not only is he got a great gift of gab and pen, but he's also a wonderful human being and with the biggest heart. And he knows how much, you know, I'm a piano player by nature. It's what I grew up playing, but I have an affinity for ethnic woodwinds and funky recorders and stuff. And as soon as we'd finished this project, he had come over here for lunch and we were just having a chat, and he gifted me a recorder that belonged to his dad, and it's a tenor recorder, and it's rosewood, and it's very old. It's probably from the 60s, and you know, misty tears in my eye. I mean, what a lovely, wonderful gift, and it just, you know, it spoke to just how magical music is and how you can create these sort of bonds with people. Well, not sort of, but you can create these definitive bonds with people that sort of transcend normal friendships. It's almost like, you know, when you fall in love with someone and then you break up and never see them again. Well, part of you always stays with them. And that's sort of like what it is to make music with someone is there's this sort of like falling in love of the soul that happens, and it crosses gender lines and it crosses spiritual lines and political lines. And it just sort of creates this like camaraderie that you can never really break. And that was what this project really represented to me was getting a bunch of people together that I loved and doing something that I loved with them to create something that was bigger than all of us. And that's, I think, any composer's goal with any project, let alone a video game.
Yeah, for sure. And I think that explains very, very well why it is that a lot of the composers I talk with work with the same musicians over and over again, because once you've worked with people a couple times, you're totally on the same wavelength. And that saves a lot of time. They don't have to wonder, you know, what you have in mind and that kind of thing. And yet, yeah, you've got that kind of spiritual connection, yep. which just must be really wonderful.
Absolutely.
I was going to ask you what you loved about working on this project, but I think you've already nailed that.
Yeah.
So. were there things that kind of surprised you along the way, that with the way the music turned out, or the kind of music that you ended up needing that you didn't think you were going to need in the first place?
Yeah, you know, the only thing I think that we were constantly up against was my desire to create more and more songs for this, because, you know, to me, what I love about making music is songwriting, and I do that for a lot of folks, and you know, musical theater is a big passion of mine too. So story songs, I love doing those. And so I wanted to, because of the nature of what Shakespeare is, initially what I had set out to do was to actually take prose and excerpts from Hamlet and to turn those into songs. But then when I realized that they don't really musicalize all that well all the time, and I would have to do a lot of surgery to the lyrics to make them sort of fit into what my concept of the music was, I just decided to do all original stuff in sort of the spirit of. And so, for example, Fair as a Rose, which is a song about a man who falls in love with a corpse, I thought was very fitting with the theme of what, you know, the desperation and the madness that's in Hamlet, and just the tragedy and you know, this sort of unrequited love that you know, you can never reconcile, and what's more unreconcilable than falling in love with someone that can't love you back in any way ever physically. And so to me, that's that sort of bizarre, dark, macabre song was sort of the crux of what I was trying to do with this whole soundtrack, actually.
The maiden fair as a rose, her eyes all glass and outplucked a lyre. The maiden fair as a rose, her hands all wrought with a stiffness game. I love her fast with no fear or shame. I found her here, my love so dear, the maiden fair as a rose. Came stumbled on like a pebble shorn, the maiden fair as a rose. Neath grasses feathered her nightgown worn, the maiden fair as a rose. Her skin still fresh, though who knows how long she lie like this, half alive, half gone. It seems too late, bear a peasant's fate, the maiden fair as a rose. La 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 la. With feet like branches her touch aloof, the maiden fair as a rose. The leaves and dirt frame her perfect youth, the maiden fair as a rose. The night wards off what the day once brought, la-dee-dee, la-dee-dum, it's a beggar's lot. Now her sweet perfume fills the night, she blooms, the maiden fair as a rose. Been sitting still like a thrush and grabe, with my maiden fair as a rose. I'll sit all night lest my birdie leave, the maiden fair as a rose. Though she might have once voices mute silence, no flitter, nor warble, or whistle travel hence and profess her love. Never heard, never not. I can sit and rot like a fragrant sot, as a face goes cold and a body taut. You get what you need, and I got what I want. The maiden, fair as a rose, never warm, never loud, never fear, never proud. The maiden, fair as a rose. La la la.
Connor had made a comment earlier that we couldn't do a lot of vocal music because it would be distracting from the text reading. And so that's sort of why we decided to step back. But I said, well, these songs need to be in this game because they got to be here. They were, you know, they're so much a heart and soul of what I was trying to do. And so he said, yeah, I like them too. So let's put them on the soundtrack. And I love the melodies. Just make, you know, instrumental versions. And then we'll release a couple versions of them and include the melodies, the vocal melodies where we can. And so that's sort of what we did. With that whole thing. So as far as what we needed, we ended up needing a lot more ambient music than active music. But I'm sort of an active composer that likes a lot of details. So it was, so that's what, you know, and a lot of that stuff, there's a lot of detail-oriented part writing. But then there's certain things that just sort of float and meander. And that was, that ultimately ended up being something we needed a lot more of because of the way that the player walks and hunts for information. It's almost like this constant state of perusal, and that needed to be defined musically as well.
Yeah, well, so how did that work then with the concept of, you know, of this 4-day loop that keeps repeating itself? What did you do with the music so that it wouldn't be the same every single time when Ophelia passes through a room or has to talk with another character again?
Yeah, well, you know, in terms of what we did different versus what we did to just create variety, I think that the idea was that we would have enough varying versions of the themes to make them work. But what is sort of maddening about the gameplay and sort of a reflection of what of thematically is going on was to not do that. Because, you know, as Ophelia is living through these moments again, not only are the characters doing the same thing, but the music should, in essence, sort of be doing the same thing. But in order to combat the potential, like, repetitive nature of having a piece of music that plays over and over again as you're experiencing this story, was to create different versions of the themes or to create, you know, breakouts. And so the score isn't really as maybe adaptive as some other video game scores might be, where we have multiple layers that play through. But we did definitely break some things down, and we did offer some variety in presentation. But that's also why we have, you know, 2 hours of music for a 4-hour to 6-hour game experience, is so that we can utilize as much unique music as possible.
Yeah, well, and speaking of unique, those music box versions of some of the cues and the tracks are really fascinating. And I don't know what it is about music boxes, but I always find them like a little bit creepy.
Yeah.
And so, and these are so interesting, especially because you've got that, the mechanical sound of the music box. So first of all, where do they appear in the game? And then how did you get that mechanical sound?
This is sort of another like Easter egg below the surface type thing that I was trying to achieve, that we ultimately, those music box versions didn't end up in the game. But what the intention of them was to have them play as Ophelia goes to the music box in a room. But then we realized that there really wouldn't be music boxes in that time. Like they didn't really have that technology. It wasn't something that, I mean, there was sort of, but not like I was trying to create with the sounds that I was using. The music box sounds that I was using were definitely more modern. And it's the same reason why I didn't, like, for example, use any piano in the soundtrack, because it just really didn't exist at that time in a way that was tangible and usable. But the music box was meant to be used in Ophelia's room every time she went back to her room. But we found that that sort of this dark silence that we got from Hamlet's theme in that moment was sort of a better usage. But we kept them on the soundtrack because they were just, you know, like a homage to what we had initially set out to do. Out of the 2 hours that are on that soundtrack, or 2 hours and 15 minutes, I believe there's about 10 minutes or 12 minutes of music that did not make the final. And then the vocal versions, not all of them are in the actual game, but they're there as part of the spirit of the game and definitely part of the original concept of what the music was going to be.
Yeah, well, that, like I said, that they add a lot, because it's a different way of hearing those melodies and those themes. Just the way that you incorporated that mechanical sound makes it really sound like a real music box.
Yeah, so that's interesting. So some of those sounds actually, you know, sample libraries in 2019 and for the past few years have been wonderful. And you can buy things like a music box sound pack or a sound library for, you know, Kontakt or whatever. And they'll have like a whole patch that's just things like technical sounds, like cranks and dials and tines, and the twang of like maybe a misfired tine, or maybe like the ratchet sound of the box opening or something. And so I turned those into a percussion kit, and I sort of intermittently fed those in. And then I think I grabbed some like watch sounds and stuff and used those and pitched them in different ways and just sort of incorporated them in the background, because I did want it to feel like a sort of a technical oddity. And that is really one of the things that I regret did not make it into the game. And I still feel maybe Connor can add it back later, or we can go back and change this. But, you know, every time Ophelia goes to her room and walks over to her desk, that was supposed to be, as sort of an Easter egg sound. But I think that, you know, limitations and some other things prevented that from happening. But I love that you loved it, because I definitely loved it.
It's really interesting, and I haven't heard music boxes in a soundtrack sounding exactly like that, I don't think, ever. So oh, cool. It's, and we have an old, like 100-and-some-year-old music box.
Yeah.
And, like, you really nailed it with all those awesome creaky sounds and stuff.
Thank you.
Well, wow, we've like talked a lot about the soundtrack, but is there anything else that I didn't touch on that you thought was fun or special or made the whole project really unique?
You know, for me, this is just sort of like this big sort of overall snapshot of what kind of music I like to write for games. And you know, in terms of my own personal mission when it comes to composing game scores, songwriting is my main interest. And And I love to help create worlds that come alive through instrumental and vocal music and songs that might have existed in that same time period, sung by other characters in the game, is always sort of my MO. So I do this with lots of different projects now, where I think, you know, what would these characters be listening to if they were there in the game? And that becomes part of the score. So all those songs that I wrote, including the song sung by the very, very talented and wonderful Caroline Graner, or both of those songs, and then you know, Kevin's songs and all that would, to me, be music that the characters might experience if they were living in that world. And that would be the music that would play, you know, at fairs and in their homes. And I find that to be very evocative and intimate and personal. As song often does rule our daily lives, so should it in the games that we love and we play, I feel. And games like Skyrim do that really well, and you know, other big fantasy games. So why not do it on a smaller, intimate level? We even do, I even do songwriting for iOS games now, where, you know, we do a story game and I'll have one or two songs in those games that might be evocative of the world. So that's a very important and personal concept of mine. And I feel like this whole soundtrack was such a joy to create. And 4 years is way too long to work on any project, but I'm definitely glad I had that time to sort of explore and refine the style, and I hope that all the players and or just music fans can dive into a little bit and experience some of the magic that Golden Glitch created with Elsinore.
Well, it's just remarkable because it just brings that whole world alive, and the experience of listening to it, just even in the car, is just really wonderful. Awesome. So you just did an amazing job. And I was just curious, there was a really interesting thread on Twitter, I don't know, a week or so ago, and game composers were sort of asking each other, well, what's the worst advice you ever got when you let people know you wanted to have a career as a composer? And I don't know, I would love to know what sort of bad advice you got that it turned out to not be applicable at all.
You know, and this is such a terrible thing. And the only reason I bring it up is because it's sort of it was the worst piece of advice I ever got, and the best piece of advice is a mentor of mine who is now since passed, who I had when I was in college, had once told me not to worry so much about melody. And this really upset me. And it upset me because I am a melodic composer. Like, that is like melody and song and that whole thing. And that's what I've been harping on this whole time. But she had said, don't worry so much about melody. And, you know, and it didn't occur to me until, in fact, probably a year before she had passed. And I think I had told her this. And she just passed last year, so maybe 2 years ago, that what she was really saying to me was, don't discount everything underneath the surface. That melody is fine, but the fabric of what the song is way more important than just the melody. And that was very much an interesting epiphany that I had. But for years, I was like, don't worry about the melody. What is she thinking? Who could this person be? Don't worry about the melody. That's what we're supposed to do. We're composers after all. But that was such an antiquated way for me to think about music, and such a surface level thing. And as I've matured as a composer, it's gotten better. So, you know, I think, you know, for the most part, most people want to see other people be successful, instead of, you know, with the exception of the people that, you know, probably you shouldn't have in your life anyway. So most advice I've gotten has been really great, and I've been really sort of fortunate that I've been able to come across and meet so many wonderful people in this industry, many of which have been my friend for quite some time, and I hope it continues to be that way.
Yeah, well, Adam, I have just really, really enjoyed talking with you. And again, the soundtrack is amazing. And so thank you so much for taking some time to sort of help us look under the hood at this really incredible soundtrack.
My absolute pleasure. My wife always says, you really like talking about yourself, don't you? I guess that's true, because I definitely had a good time talking to you today. And again, I'm honored to have been asked to be on this incredible program. And I hope that your listeners find a little bit of joy in this project that we set out to create.